NPR News.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Reaction continues to roll in almost 2 weeks after the Republican National Committee released its report on what went wrong for the party in 2012, along with dozens and dozens of recommendations for the future. In the mainstream media, the report's been described as brutally honest, audacious, and hard-hitting. Democrats have called it vapid, obvious, and condescending to women and minorities. But some of this report's toughest critics are conservative Republicans. The American Spectator said it represents a lot of navel-gazing and that much of it is wrong. And Sarah Palin referred to it in a speech before conservatives as a mere fresh coat of rhetorical paint on the party, as she warned Republicans not to abandon their principles. The report examines both the messaging of Republican policies and, in a few cases, whether the message itself is the problem. It talks about more outreach to female voters, minority groups, younger Americans, and its ideas about the presidential nominating process are important for New Hampshire, given our first-in-the-nation primary. Today in The Exchange, recommendations for a Republican reboot. Let's hear from you if you're a member of the Grand Old Party. What do you want to see change before the next big election? Should there be changes in positions on issues, or better outreach and communication, or a combination of both? And even if you're not a Republican, what do you make of some of the ideas in this wide-ranging report? Give us a call, The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. And we have three guests in studio. Steve Dupree is here, National GOP Committee Chairman, former chairman of the New Hampshire Republican State Committee, a member of the RNC Executive Committee. He also served as an advisor to John McCain during his 2008 presidential campaign. And Steve Dupree, great to see you. Welcome back.
It's great to be back.
Also with us, Jennifer Horn, New Hampshire GOP chairman. She was the Republican nominee for the 2nd Congressional District in 2008 and was active in Mitt Romney's presidential campaign. And Jennifer Horn, it's been a while. Welcome back to you, too.
Thank you very much. It's always a pleasure to be here, Laura.
And Dean Spiliotis is here, civic scholar in the School of Arts and Sciences at Southern New Hampshire University, author of the popular website nhpoliticalcapital.com. And Dean, welcome back, and thank you for your time once again.
Sure. Good morning, Laura.
Well, and Dean, I'll turn to you first, but obviously I want to hear from Jennifer and Steve, too. There's so much in here in terms of recommendations for the future. What do you think, Dean, is the most important takeaway from this report overall?
Absolutely. It's a 100-page report. It has 219 individual recommendations. It's quite an interesting read for any political junkies out there, Democratic or Republican. Three big takeaways for me. The first is an acknowledgement by the party of the demographic challenge that it faces. So the party needs to do some better outreach to constituencies where it lost ground in the last presidential election: African Americans, Latinos, Asian Americans, women, younger voters, and a general need to kind of recast the party as more youthful and diverse rather than the party of old white men, as some of the focus group studies that the party did showed, that people thought of the party as kind of old and out of touch. It's kind of ironic because if you think about sort of the up-and-coming leaders in the party, Marco Rubio, Bobby Jindal, Nikki Haley, Susana Martinez, Rand Paul, Paul Ryan, Chris Christie, and others, there's a big group of diverse, fairly young by political standards leaders. So there's really a sort of a perception gap there because they do have that sort of deep bench, but it's only just starting to kind of break through. It certainly didn't in the last election with Mitt Romney or the election before that with John McCain. So that's the first takeaway. The second takeaway is this issue of tone versus substance of the message that you mentioned. And I think this is going to be one of the key splits within the party. There are a group of Republicans within the party who think that it's simply an issue better tone. And so when you increase outreach to these constituencies that I mentioned, you go into the neighborhoods, you invest in on the ground organizers, et cetera, to kind of help the message resonate better with the groups that didn't vote for you the last time around. So some people think it's just a matter of tone, that the message is solid. But there's another group within the party, as you mentioned, who think that the actual substance of the message is outdated, that it is not really adapting to the kind of the demographic reality of changes in the country. So the second takeaway is this issue of tone versus substance in the Republican message. And for me, the third one, as somebody who studies campaigns and elections, is the attempt by the party to reassert control over the primary process, move the convention up into June or July, shorten the primary season, fewer debates, figure out ways to incentivize and penalize campaigns and individual states that don't comply. That's a tall order. But those are sort of the three things: the demographics, the message, and the primary calendar.
And just real quick to you, Dean, you mentioned the focus groups that these folks talk to. Just remind us where this report comes from. It's a big deal.
Right, absolutely. The Republican National Committee basically authorized a study group or a committee of five individuals, virtually all of whom are GOP committee members of the National Committee. There are 168, I believe, elected members of the National Committee. So it's basically a subcommittee of the larger committee. And they did tons of research, online surveys, focus groups. Their study says they made 52,000 individual contacts, 3,000 listening sessions, 50 focus groups. It's quite a detailed, what they call sort of a deep dive into the underpinnings of the party. So this is a very serious report. Any recommendations need 75% of that 168. I think there's a meeting in Los Angeles next month, so they could kind of take some of these. Reince Priebus, the RNC chair, admitted that, you know, some of these may be difficult to do in practice because you do need 75% of the committee. But yeah, this is not some sort of thing that was just kind of thrown out. This was
sure.
kind of sort
this
of
is the
a
official
big,
deal.
Yes, from the party, commissioned by the party for consideration by the membership.
Our phone number for you to join us, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. This hour, we're looking at this report that Dean Spiliotis just described, addressing what happened to the party in 2012, and as he said, more than 100 recommendations for the future. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. And Jennifer Horn, again, we'll get into some of the specifics that Dean mentioned, but what's the big important thing about this for you from your perspective as the current state party chair?
Well, I think what this report did for not just for me, but for the majority of Republicans is that it confirmed what we already sort of knew in our gut after November. And that is that our message, who we are as Republicans, what we stand for, what we feel strongly about, was not well articulated in the last election cycle. It didn't get through. It didn't make a personal connection with voters across the state and across the country. And that's our failure. We failed on that. I think all the things that Dean talked about, all the mechanics of campaigns and elections, identifying voters, turning them out on election day, you know, technology. You can go through a whole long list of 100 things that influence any election and say that, you know, we failed in to one degree or another. But in the end, you win elections by making a personal connection with your neighbors and inspiring them to turn out and vote. And we failed to do that. I don't think the problem is the message.
That's what I wanted to ask you.
Yeah, I don't think that the problem is the core message. And I find it fascinating that, you know, there's a tremendous amount of disagreement or you know, people on the other side, on the Democratic Party, where Democrats fall, you know, across a broad spectrum of ideologies as well. But nobody ever goes to the Democrats and say, hey, do you think maybe the message is wrong? You know, is he really a Democrat? Does he get to stay in? I think it was really a question of not being able to make that connection. And the example I use all the time is, you know, we can spend decades debating limited government. We are Republicans. We're for limited government. We can have that philosophical debate until we pass out. But if you're a single mom and you're raising three kids by yourself and you're trying to figure out, should I buy milk or should I buy gas? That's not a debate you're particularly interested in engaging in. And we did not make the personal connection to convince that single mom that if you vote Republican, the quality of your life is going to be better than it is today.
What do you think, Steve Dupree? Your broad thoughts, and then on some of the specifics that Dean and Jennifer mentioned.
Well, I think Dean's analysis was spot on. I think it really was about looking at our demographic problems, the tone versus substance debate, where you're seeing a lot of the commentators from the establishment versus the Tea Party have right now. That's where those skirmishes seem to be playing out in the media. And then control over the process in the primary. We do have a demographic issue we need to talk about. For example, I was looking at the figures in 2012. The Hispanic vote was 17% of the overall vote. It's going to be 29% of the overall vote in this country by 2050.
Wow.
Now, I'm not the sharpest tack in the bin, but we better find a way to make sure our message resonates with Hispanics. And when you think about it, Hispanic voters voted, we got a strong percentage of those when Bush was running for president. because they should be natural allies. They tend to be Catholic. They tend to be faithful. They tend to have strong family units. They like, they're entrepreneurial. They're hardworking. And yet our discussion, and I lived through this in the 2008 primary, where John McCain almost lost the nomination because he was for comprehensive immigration reform. It's okay to have a different opinion, but sometimes our tone is way off. One thing the report says is sometimes Republicans get caught in an ideological cul-de-sac where we drive around. If you look at us at the state level, we have 30 out of 50 governors. Some of the people, in Kasich out of Ohio that Dean was mentioning, we're doing incredibly innovative things.
And the report talks about
right.
the success
Yet
of Republican
at the federal
governors.
Level, we've lost 5 out of 6 presidential elections. The Republican Party brand, nobody votes for us because they want more government. They vote for Republicans because we're better fiscal stewards. And that brand was damaged, I think, in the 2000 to 2008. They vote for us because we're the innovators in government. We're not tied to unions, obviously, so we can try some bold things. Historically, they voted for us because we're stronger on defense and foreign policy. That ebbs and flows depending on the national situation and the economy. But we've got great things happening at the state level and all these young leaders sort of coming up, but we're losing that at the federal level. I think that's tone, substance, demographics, and mechanics.
So getting to this point of is it the way you messaged your message, pardon my repetition, or is it the message itself? For example, let me hit it right on the head. A lot of folks in this, including in this report, say, look, the party needs to shift on gay marriage. It needs to tone down the anti-gay rhetoric, maybe even start embracing some level of gay rights, that this is a huge problem for younger voters. The report, Steve, calls it a gateway issue for younger voters.
Yes. I mean, there are 168 members of the Republican National Committee. I think people know that I have been a strong supporter of abortion rights since 1972 when I was elected to the legislature, and I favor gay marriage. I am in the minority on the Republican National Committee, and that's fine. And I have worked for and helped elect a lot of candidates who differ with me on those issues, from Steve Merrill to Bob Smith, you name it, to John McCain. But you must make the party's message there be respectful so that people who disagree feel welcome, not excluded.
All right. We will talk a lot more after a short break. Lots more to dig into. We'll start taking your questions and comments, too. 1-800-892-6477 is the number for you to join our conversation. Emails are welcome, exchange@nhpr.org, and we'll be right back.
This is NHPR 919. Good morning. NHPR is more than our daily broadcast. Check out our website to listen back to a story you might have missed or only caught a part of. Find more information or related stories about something that interests you. Subscribe to podcasts, learn about special events. There's always something more at nhpr.org. More on a Republican reboot coming up on The Exchange, then a 10 on the Diane Rehm Show, the future of the CIA and challenges facing the new director. Support for NHPR comes from UR members. Sam from New England College presenting Student Preparation Days April 13th and 27th. An inside look at attending NEC, including how to prepare and apply. Program details and registration at nec.edu. And Capital Center for the Arts in Concord presenting Hair, the Public Theater's new production of this exuberant musical. Wednesday, April 17th at 7:30. Tickets at ccanh.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, reactions to the recent Republican National Committee report on where the party needs to go in the future. We invite you to join us at 1-800-892-6477. If you're a member of the Grand Old Party, what do you want to see change before the next big election? Should there be changes in positions on issues or better outreach and communication? Or a combination of both, or something else? Even if you're not a Republican, what do you make of some of the big ideas in this wide-ranging report? Our number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. And I do want to go to our listeners, but before we do, a question for you, Jennifer Horn, a follow-up to what Steve Dupree was talking about. Reince Priebus, the head of the party nationally, one of the big things he makes in this report is he says, we were not inclusive. What does that mean to you?
Well, there's no question that, and I think Steve just made this point before the break, you know, I think that the Republican Party represents a broad spectrum of ideas and philosophies and beliefs, you know, across the entire Republican spectrum. And we have to talk about these issues that are important today in a way that is inclusive, that is sensitive, that is, respectful of the dignity of individuals as human beings. You were talking about the marriage issue as this kind of came up just before the break. And I think it's important to remember that this is an issue where society is transitioning. And it's not just Republicans. It was just a year or two ago that Barack Obama and John Lynch and Jean Shaheen were campaigning as being advocates of traditional marriage. And I think that these are conversations that we're going to continue to have, not just as a party, but as a society. And it has to happen in a way, as I said, that is respectful and is compassionate and is inclusive, I guess, is the word that Reince used. And I think that he's correct about that. But in the Republican Party, we have always embraced debate. We have always embraced, the articulation of different ideas and different opinions. And I think that that makes our party stronger. I think that we are a big tent party. And again, back to what we said earlier, the fact that voters did not believe that when they voted on Election Day is our failure.
That's the messaging part that you talked about.
Yeah, and that's our failure.
So give me an example, Jennifer, if you could. Okay, so, and I'm not harping on gay marriage, but it's an example that comes up again and again in this report. How do you, as a party official, talk about this, saying we as a party oppose gay marriage in a respectful and compassionate way? Like, how do you give that message without being, mean about it?
We as a party, our party platform is clear that we support traditional marriage, and we support policies that make families stronger. And but I think that we all very much take the point that this is a conversation that has to continue and a conversation that has to expand. And I think that you can have, and I don't think it's just the issue of marriage, whether we're talking about immigration or marriage or fiscal issues or anything else, that we can have disagreements and still be respectful of each other and still be inclusive of our neighbors, that we can have disagreements both as a party and between parties without being personal or hateful or intolerant. And I don't think that my belief is that the Republican Party has not been those things for the most part going in the past. But again, it's about the language we choose. It's about the tone we use. And I think that a lot of who we are as Republicans was lost in a very heightened level of rhetoric in the last election. And I think that probably came from passion and came from disagreement and a lot of other things. But there's no question that as a result of that, that part of our message was lost.
Dean, go ahead.
Sure. I just wanted to mention, this is a really good discussion about the report. But in terms of substantive policy recommendations, the report per se does not make a lot of specific recommendations on policy. It talks a lot about structural changes that need to be made in order to make the party more competitive. It does talk, as Steve mentioned, about enacting comprehensive immigration reform. The one other area where I think it's important to mention some suggestions is the report says that the party needs to do better at addressing middle-class economic anxiety. So I'm reading from the messaging recommendations here. It says the Republican Party must be the champion of those who seek to climb the economic ladder of life. The party needs to blow the whistle on corporate malfeasance and attack corporate welfare. The party needs to speak out when CEOs get millions of dollars in retirement packages, but middle class workers have not had a meaningful raise in years. That's a very different tone on economic policy than what we heard in the last election. So I don't want to this is not really a report about policy positions. The party can debate its platform as it always does before elections. But immigration and the kind of misfiring on the economy, I think, are both important to note.
Yeah, and I was struck by that too, Dean. And we were talking before the show, Steve Dupree, about this report does say, look, we got to focus on the little guy instead of standing up for, corporations and so forth.
Well, Dean hit the nail on the head about the messaging. Republican, if you talk to somebody who's not involved, they'll say, well, Republicans just want less government and low taxes because they hate government and hate taxes. What the message should be is we want the most effective, efficient government that's innovative, that tries new things, that keeps taxes low, because that means that single mom who's having to decide whether she pays her rent on time or can afford the gas she needs to get to work, we leave more money in her pocket. That disconnect wasn't there. And you can have that debate without saying the Democrats are the devil reincarnate. They may want to spend more, and they think that you can get more benefit from those programs. But we lost that. It was, we're looking out for Wall Street. That's
Wall Street,
crazy.
The bailout, yeah. Bank bailout, and so yeah. forth.
We used to be the party, if you think of the Eisenhower era, the Reagan era, that was for Main Street. Wall Street will take care of itself. We need to get back to that.
All right, let's hear what our listeners think. Again, the number here in the exchange, 1-800-892-6477. A couple emails have come in, too, exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. Let's go to Manchester first, folks, and Bill is on the air from there. Hi, Bill. Go ahead.
Hi, Laura. Hey, I'd like to ask if the report speaks to the issue of bipartisanship and the current lack of it, and whether the Republican Party is looking at all to retool, recraft their approach to reaching across the aisle and trying to find solutions that solve something for the whole country and not just a portion of it.
Yeah, and Bill, you know, this is mentioned, I think. I did see some reference to it. Jennifer?
Oh, there's no question we need bipartisanship in Washington to solve problems. I mean, that is unfortunately a bipartisan problem, you know, and it's got a long history of it. You know, Senator Kelly Ayotte just recently tried to offer an amendment in the Senate before the sequester that would have allowed for cuts without injuring the military, without some of the more damaging cuts that have taken place. And that wasn't even allowed to come up for discussion. It wasn't even allowed to come up for debate. So there's no question that we have an issue with a lack of a bipartisan effort in Washington. But I have to say that I really firmly reject the idea that it is a Republican problem. It's very much a two-way street on that.
Yeah, and it's interesting. The report, Steve, from my read, correct me if I'm wrong, says that Republican governors get it. They need to solve problems. But the way that we nominate candidates in our primaries, and this is for Democrats and Republicans, right. We're nominating super conservative and super liberal House members. And no, they're not going to see eye to eye. That's a problem of gerrymandering and primaries.
You're right. The report, though, in answer to Bill's question, really doesn't talk about the need for the Republican Party as a political organization is to sell bipartisanship. You generally do not win elections, and you sure don't win primaries within your own party saying, if you elect me and pick me as your Republican nominee, I'm not going to have differences with the Democratic nominee. I'm going to get along with them. And while that should be the goal of government after the election, the report really doesn't address that.
Yeah, Dean.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I was just talking about this with my students yesterday. We were discussing whether or not the lack of bipartisanship was a political problem or a structural problem. And there's a belief among some political scientists increasingly that it's a structural problem. You mentioned gerrymandering. Congressional districts are kind of increasingly safe either on the left or the right. There aren't a lot of people in the middle to cut deals with anymore, the sort of typical kind of people who would facilitate bipartisanship. It's no longer simply a case of, you know, you have kind of Republicans and Democrats and they'll come together occasionally and cut a deal. The polarity in Congress is sort of magnified beyond what you typically see in the normal kind of the regular voting population. It was interesting that we were just literally talking about this yesterday, that Republicans often get sitting Republicans often get primaried from the right for not being conservative enough. That's moved the Republican Party to the right. Same thing on the Democratic side. They've moved to the left. There's nobody in the middle. And that's a real structural problem. It's not simply a political problem.
All right. Well, and perhaps, again, a subject for another show, Dean, because there's a lot there. And California is experimenting with another way to do this. But we won't go there now. Bill, thank you for that call. Let's go to Barbara next. And Barbara, you're on the air. Welcome.
Thank you so much. One of my biggest concerns was from the presidential election was not the amount of grassroots organization for not only New Hampshire but throughout the U.S., doing the retail marketing of the GOP and our candidates, knocking on doors, making phone calls, really letting our voices be heard. And I wanted to find out if that was addressed within the manifesto and on a New Hampshire state level, if there ever is going to be an organized association through the Republican Party with paid positions like there is for the Democratic Party, to really make this a full-time effort for the 2014 and 2016 elections.
Yeah, Barbara, lots of this in the report here. And Jennifer Horn, you mentioned this earlier, the idea that that there wasn't enough, as Barbara says, knocking on doors, grassroots. I think there was a lot of talk during the campaign that social science shows that the biggest thing that's going to make somebody change their mind isn't seeing an ad on TV,
exactly,
isn't getting a glossy, scary, you know,
right,
flyer in their mailbox. It's me coming to your door and saying, you know, Jennifer, I think this is how I'm voting, and I hope you do too.
It's talking to their neighbor. It's coming to the door and saying, you know, hi, Laura, I'm Jennifer. I live down the block, and, you know, our kids go to the same school, and you know, we live in the same neighborhood, and here are my concerns, and here, and I don't think that we lacked passion on our side for that message and for that effort of that grassroots effort. But your caller made, I think, a really important point that was a significant difference, and that is that on the other side, they were actually paying people to do this. It was a well-funded, highly staffed door-to-door effort. And on the Republican side, at the state level, you know, that's the resources are not there to do that. And I've always been a believer that people who are, you know, who are knocking on the door out of passion rather than out of a paycheck probably do a better job in the messaging. But this is one of the areas where we have to strengthen our efforts. We have to figure out a different, better way to do it. And I can tell you, as chairman of the state party, at least, that this is at the top of our list. It's a priority, whether we're talking about social media or technology, the actual grassroots organizing and efforts and door knocking and phone banking and everything else, reorganizing and strengthening that effort is absolutely a priority for the New Hampshire Republican Party this year.
And you're the unpaid chair, so, we should say.
And I am the unpaid chair.
And the Democrats pay their chair.
But Laura, it's the glory and the satisfaction. So,
so I did it for 8 years.
Right, right.
Well, and Steve, what about Linda's point? And again, excuse me, Barbara's point. And thank you, Barbara. Was there too much big money on TV and not enough, you know, shoe leather?
Yes. I mean, I met with this committee, the chair of this committee, Henry Barber, is a good friend of mine. As I was saying, I think I'm 10th in seniority on the RNC, which is good and bad, I guess. And I met with the committee three times, number of emails. And, for example, in New Hampshire, the Republican National Committee funded the victory effort, which is your final push. And I think the report shows we spent $1.7 million in New Hampshire. But if you look at total transfers from the Republican National Committee to the state party in the first year of that two-year cycle, they were less than $200,000.
Untangle that.
My point is the party would get a lot more bang for the buck if you invest in the state parties early to build the kind of qualitative database, which the Obama campaign did a fabulous job on. For example, we use robocalls. People go, great, we connected and we spoke to somebody, they listened to our message. The Obama campaign had the same volunteer talk to a neighbor three or four times over a year. It's that sort of neighbor versus neighbor. So we were beaten technologically. Historically, Democrats have always had more people to knock on doors because of the union membership.
Although union membership in New Hampshire is really low.
Yeah, but guess what? There are a lot of union members who take a day off from Massachusetts if there isn't a competitive election. The best thing that helps New Hampshire elections, we in part beat Al Gore in 2000 with George Bush, even though Governor Shaheen was the head of that campaign, because there was a competitive race in Massachusetts, so the unions had to stay home there, and the manpower advantage was changed. So we didn't have as good a data. We didn't have as good a get-out-the-vote effort. The money invested was too late. A lot of mistakes that were made.
And invested, you're saying, Stephen, the wrong way then.
Yeah.
It should have been invested more in boots on the ground.
And historically, to offset the labor advantage, the Republicans had better technology. We were the first to do robocalls and stuff like that. And quite frankly, we're behind on that.
Well, and everybody hangs up on those robocalls now, right? I mean, you just delete them.
Or you get rid of a landline.
Yeah.
Which is a problem with our polling.
Yeah, just to let Barbara know, there's a whole section in the report that talks about voter contact. And it suggests that the Republican Party look at all the different ways in which campaigns interact with voters, take some lessons from the Obama campaign success, but look at all the different ways in which voters and campaigns interact and literally test them to see which are the optimal in terms of kind of bang for your buck, as Steve is suggesting, and then kind of moving forward with an investment in those areas.
Jennifer.
But, you know, and I think that goes to a point that we sort of skimmed over earlier when we talked about who our voters are. How did we lose young people? How did we lose all these different groups of voters? I've always been a big believer, and I think that this report kind of backs this up, that you have to go where voters are. You have to talk about what they care about, and you have to go where they are. So that's why we knock on doors and need to do more of it. But at the same time, young voters are not answering the door. They're on social media. They're listening to music on Pandora. They're in a fresh out of high school first-time job, or they're on campus. It's not enough to just knocking on the door. We've got to do better at that, but it's not enough by itself.
Sure. All right. Let's take another call. Again, the number I want to remind you is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. And Linda's waiting on the line from Plymouth. Hi, Linda. Thanks for waiting. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
Hi, I'm a Republican, and I'm very proud to be a Republican. And I've been watching, the debates over the past couple of elections, and I really feel that Republicans are being overshadowed by these hot-button issues, anti-abortion, anti-gay rights. Those are kinds of the things we're being known for now, when Republican people have such strong qualities to bring. And I'm just curious, how are we going to get the message to the younger generation and to the voting population, really, about what a true Republican is, strong country and strong people, and how do we go about bringing back the whole picture of the Republican Party?
Well, what do you think, Linda, in terms of getting that young voice? That's a huge issue in this report.
Oh, it is such a huge issue. And the young people are swept up so much with the rights and with these current topics, and that's fine. That's great for people to be informed on what's coming down the pike. But Republicans come from a long history of strong people and strong morals and strong values. And I just worry that we're getting lost in the shuffle of, no, we don't support gay rights, but look what we do support. Look what we do value. Where's the balance?
Okay. Linda, thank you for the call. And Steve, if you could fold in with what you think about Linda's point, and Linda, thank you. This seems to me what she's talking about is part of the appeal of the Rand Pauls and Ron Pauls. The idea of strength, independence, saying no to overspending, for example, that's a big theme of the Pauls. And I'm wondering if young people, some of them, were a little annoyed with the party by the way it kind of shuffled off Ron Paul to the side.
Well, I would disagree that Ron Paul was shuffled off to the side. I mean, the rules were you had to win so many votes to get nominated. If you're a strong – I was a Pete McCloskey supporter in 1972 running against Richard Nixon. He had one delegate. One.
Is that you?
No, I wasn't even it. And he didn't get nominated either. Doonesbury did a famous cartoon about that, the one McCloskey delegate yelling, but call on me. And
I'm
it doesn't happen.
I'm a good Republican. I don't know who Pete McCloskey is.
Well, there we go. Wow. Like I say, I'm getting up there in seniority. So I don't think Ron Paul was shunted aside. But the amazing thing, if you look at the demographic of supporters of Ron Paul, which I think Rand Paul is doing a great job assuming, is they talk to that individual liberty. That filibuster on whether or not the Obama administration would come out and say, we will never use a drone over American soil to attack or kill an American citizen, may have been a small point, but it was a big point. And that's a message that appeals. Young people like liberty.
All right, Linda, thank you.
And Republicans like liberty. So that's a natural connection for us. That's a connection that we should be able to make.
All right. We will talk a lot more after a short break. I got a stack of emails here, so I'll go through a couple of those as well. You can email us, exchange@nhpr.org, or call 1-800-892-6477.
Support for NHPR comes from UR members and Alliance Audiology, Eliza Evans, Ike Valdez, Nicole Betancourt, and Libby Young. Dedicated to enhancing lives through better hearing, Alliance Audiology, LLC.com. And the Southern New Hampshire Concert Series at SNHU featuring the celebrated chamber ensemble, Klempler Trio, on Wednesday, April 3rd at 7 p.m. Details at snhu.edu. It's 9:40. This is NHPR.
My name is Amanda Loader, and I'm a business and economy reporter for New Hampshire Public Radio. New Hampshire likes to give entrepreneurs and businesses a lot of breathing room to maneuver. It acts like this test lab where different ideas are being implemented. It's an experiment in creating a hospitable business climate. Now, whether that works or doesn't work, that's the job of a business reporter, to really dig in and figure that out.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, a New Hampshire News Roundup. Email us your questions and comments about the news that you heard this week to exchange@nhpr.org before the program. And join us tomorrow morning live at 9. Today in The Exchange, we're looking at a recent report by the Republican National Committee on what went wrong in 2012 and lots of recommendations for the future. We've been looking at some of those, and you can join us at 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. And all of you, I promised before the break to get through some of these emails. Carol has an email. She says, please ask your guests, is it possible that your message did get out? People heard it, understood it, and rejected that message. Dean Spiliotis, to you first.
Well, this is the fundamental debate within the party. I've seen it coming for a number of years now, going back to some of the Democratic wins in 2006 and 2008. There's just a kind of a core ideological debate in the party about whether or not the message is the correct one for winning the presidency or the one that's going to resonate with the most voters. So, as I think both Jennifer and Steve have kind of articulated, so both sides of this debate, some people in the party think that the message is fine. It just was not conveyed in a way that resonated with voters and spoke to their anxieties and their hopes and dreams. And others feel like the message is just fundamentally no longer in tune with kind of the demographic kind of cultural reality of the country. So, there really isn't an answer to what Carol suggested. That's been the criticism from one side of the party. If you listen to the speeches at CPAC, the Conservative Political Action Conference that went on right around the time you referenced Sarah Palin and Rand Paul, who got a lot of attention for their speeches there, it's symptomatic of this debate the issue of whether or not the message is the appropriate message. And I think this is just going to continue to be debated for some time into the future.
Well, what do you think, Steve Dupree? We talked about this at the beginning of the show, but Carol's asking a fundamental point.
Well, if you look at every successful presidential candidate, starting with Ronald Reagan, they are able to bring people who have very different viewpoints on issues together on broad themes. You know, we're a party that has a pro-life platform. I respect that. I feel very welcome in the Republican Party because I think we do a great job with managing government. We do a great job with spending and taxes. We do a great job with individual liberty. I think we do a smart job on foreign policy. The successful candidates are the ones who bring these very different views and get people to work together and saying, I agree with this candidate more than I disagree with him. He's our best or she's our best chance to win. I sure like that candidate better than the other parties. It's always a shifting of coalitions. As we've had third-party groups come along and all these groups that want ideological purity, both on the left and right, it, as Dean said, it pushes nominees left and right. And one of the challenges is to resist that. That's the ball game.
And we talked about this earlier again, Jennifer. And what do you think? I mean, you can say we're a big tent, but the platform does say, no to gay marriage, no to abortion. So far, the position on immigration has not been welcoming, some say, in this report. So you can say with your words, we're welcoming, we're big tent. But Carol is saying, look, people don't like what you stand for.
Right.
It's not how you say it. They don't like what you're saying.
Right. Well, I think, was it Carol you said was the listener? I think, the same question could have been asked of the Democrats during the 8 years that George W. Bush was in office or the 8 years that Ronald Reagan was in office. And I think that when you see the huge success that we experienced as a party just one election cycle ago in 2010, I think it's hard to make the argument that there is a broad-based nationwide total rejection of the Republican platform or the Republican position. And I think Steve made a great point that, all the great presidents have been leaders who have been able to bring people together on difficult issues. And immigration, I think, as you've referenced a couple of times now, is going to be the issue where I think that we're going to be able to, our next great leader is going to have to bring us together. And, the American Enterprise Institute just issued a report a year or two ago about the need addressing STEM workers, science, technology, engineer, and math workers, and the need to, bring more of these workers in and to revamp our current immigration policy to be able to fill these needs. And I think that as we go forward, we hear Marco Rubio and Rand Paul and other Republicans start to really kind of take a leading voice on what is a difficult issue. And I think that going forward, we're going to see the Republican Party is going to be the voice that solves problems and brings people together.
Just a quick point. It's not only our party. Imagine what it was like to be a pro-life Democrat like Governor Bob Casey out of Pennsylvania. How welcome do you feel in the Democratic Party?
And let's remember, Harry Reid is pro-life. There are thousands of pro-life Democrats in our state and millions more across the country who don't have a voice. I think, Steve, again, darn it, Steve, don't keep making me say that you're making good points.
We're on the same team. It's okay. I'm not Ray Buckley.
Well, again, I think Steve makes a really good point.
And to your point, Jennifer, about, let's not forget that it hasn't been complete disaster for Republicans. I mean,
right.
They still run the House. And Mark emails, he says, President Obama said we got shellacked. Wasn't that just 2 years ago? Did so much change in 2 years? It's Mark in Rochester.
Exactly. And we have the Senate here in New Hampshire as well. I mean, it was not a complete loss for the Republican Party anywhere.
Here's a question for you, Dean Spiliotis, following up on what Jennifer said, talking about immigration. She said the next great leader, and Steve has said this too, needs to bring people together, regardless of differences on some of these key issues, talk about it the right way, bring folks together like they said Ronald Reagan did. This is, pardon the pun, the elephant in the room for this report. It doesn't mention the name Mitt Romney. And some Republicans following up from this report have said, hey, Mitt Romney has to own some of this. He dragged the party down. He was aloof. He wasn't inclusive. He was a corporate dude that didn't play well with the middle class and lower income folks, the 47%. I mean, why isn't he in this report?
Well, I mean, I think the reason why he's not in the report is there's sort of a tendency by parties on both sides that when your presidential nominee loses either moderately or badly, you typically kind of cast them aside and sort of look to the future. So, you could get him to step up and take a little bit more blame, but I think there's a sense within the party that that's not really worth it. And you see that
it's
in both parties whenever there's a presidential loss. So I think that's certainly part of it. But I think part of the problem is that it's not clear. Now, we've talked a lot about, Steve made a good point about, and Jennifer both, about finding somebody like a Ronald Reagan who can bring people together even when there are disagreements. It's not clear to me that there is a single one person at this point within the Republican Party who can do that, which is, I think, why you see these kinds of core divisions within the party. The other thing I would say, we've now mentioned a couple times that, it wasn't a total disaster because of 2010. The midterm voting electorate is a very different voting electorate demographically than who votes at a presidential election. So, sure, Republicans can continue to win congressional seats, particularly in the House, but these issues really deal with kind of the presidential electorate, which demographically is a somewhat different electorate than what you see at the midterm. This is something Andy Smith from UNH has talked about extensively, that 2010 backlash here with the Tea Party and Republican gains is a fundamentally somewhat different demographic phenomenon than what you saw in 08 or 2012 with the Obama coalition.
So are you saying that these midterm elections, Dean, are more representative of, the core folks on either side, and that the big presidential elections look more like America?
Yeah, you typically get much bigger turnout at a presidential election in terms of percentages. You're more likely to have kind of the core voters of the disaffected party, be it Democrats or Republicans, turn out to vote at the midterm. It's why presidents typically lose seats at the midterm. On top of that, you had the Tea Party phenomenon that sort of piggybacked on the need to sort of take back some ground after the big Democratic wins in 06 and 08. So there's been a lot of talk about, is New Hampshire kind of schizophrenic? Not really. You just saw a fundamentally different demographic turnout in 2012 than 2010.
All right. I'd love to get a couple more calls in before we close out. And Kevin is waiting in Bedford. Hi, Kevin. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Good morning. As always, love your program. I think we're missing really the bigger picture. I think the folks you have around are very learned. They understand how we need to move forward. But we've got to stop some of the Republican senators from saying things like, I'm going to spend the rest of my days keeping Barack Obama from getting reelected. Well, how did that work out for him? First off, you were sent to Washington to do a job. That job wasn't to keep Barack Obama. And, we need to get away from that. Or the senators who made the comments about women and rape and birth control. And, I mean, we really should think about what we're going to say before we say it, because all it does is just push and push. I have a lot of liberal friends, some of them females, saying, hey, touch my ovaries, I'm out of here.
Yeah, the woman problem.
There are other things in this world. No. You just turned them off right from the start. And, Mitt, unfortunately, he kind of stepped on his tongue a few times. The Pauls, I think they have some great things going for them, but, this isolationist solution that sometimes they preach, that isn't a middle of the road. We need to change the way we look and feel as Republicans. I've been Republican my entire life, and I'm proud of it, but, we've got to start embracing some change. Yes, I am for marriage, but I'm also for civil unions because they're getting they're not getting their fair shake of the federal money. You know, we have thousands and thousands of people on welfare.
Okay, Kevin, and I got to wrap you up. I apologize, yeah, but you raised two great points. So let's take the second one first, Jennifer Horn. The woman problem. Don't touch my ovaries.
Well, I figured you'd come to me for that one. But the
sexist.
So yeah, that's right. But here's what it has always. There's no question. I think this goes back to what I've said all along about that. Where we failed is making what we stand for connect in a personal way. Because when I look at the Republican Party and I hear what I have always said is a false claim from the other side that there's a war on women from the Republican Party, I don't get it because women start more small businesses than men. Women make the majority of the healthcare decisions in our society. Women make the majority of consumer purchases in our economy. Women are a major economic engine in this country, and it is the Republican policy and the Republican values, as Steve has articulated very well, of an effectively and efficiently managed government, so that the money that we earn stays in our pockets, so that we can grow our businesses and take care of our family. That is the message that I believe most strongly will connect with women when we're able to make that connection. And I have to tell you that, as a pro-life woman, I was very much offended and felt very much condescended to by the Democratic message on this issue over this past election cycle. The suggestion that somehow we need the big, strong Democratic Party to step up and protect us and defend us in some way. Listen, I can speak up and tell you whether or not I need birth control, and I can speak up and tell you, when I'm ready to have children or start a family, and at my age, clearly, I've made that decision many years ago. But I've always felt very much an arrogance from the other side on this issue, and I think that it's time that we have a lot more strong conservative Republican women out in front on this conversation.
Our caller is right, though. The woman margin was not great.
There's no question. And that's what I've said a million. And I've said this as I was running for chairman. This was a conversation we had over and over again. The fact that the Republican Party's policies and core values promote women and promote a strong economy, whether you are a stay-at-home mom or a business owner or anything else, and we weren't able to make that connection, again, as I've said many times, is our failure.
Yeah, and I think, we could do many hours on this, Steve Dupree, but, Jennifer, talking about abortion, there are pro-life Republicans, pro-life Democrats, as she said earlier, but our caller raises a point. It wasn't just about abortion. It was about contraception, abortion and rape, even for some people more on the conservative end, this went a little too far.
Well, the caller was right. We had some candidates who said some incredibly stupid things and they lost
it kind of tarred and feathered the whole party,
but
didn't
it? Tarred and feathered the whole party because the Democrats do a great job of making sure that the whole party wears it. There were some policy decisions that I think people thought were offensive. I mean, when Virginia, which is sort of a swing state, which has gone Republican, passed a law that anyone wanting an abortion had to have a ultrasonic vaginal exam before that. Can you imagine if we required every man over 40 to have an annual digital rectal exam for prostate cancer? We'd say that's an invasion. Now, abortion is a highly personal issue. We're a pro-life party, but we have become We've lost the ability in some races to embrace people who would disagree with us because ultimately it's a faith and how you believe faith and science works. We've got to be able to say the person who may disagree with us, we respect that difference, but here's why you should vote for us because it's more important whether you have enough money to pay your rent.
For some people,
that.
It's hard to get beyond that.
Oh,
just
it is.
Like gay
and,
marriage.
And,
look, and, I can't get beyond that.
Right,
you know, that's
and
how people
there are
talk.
Some people who do that, and there's some the other way on the Democrats have issues like that too. There was serious, Barack Obama had no experience in foreign policy and had been in the United States Senate for 4 years and campaigning for president for two. There are a lot of people go, Hillary Clinton was the better nominee because she had experience. I mean, there are issues on both sides, but the hot button ones, which are hot button ones in society, were well exploited by the other side.
And I just have to make the point very quickly that we are the pro-life party. I am the chairman of the Republican Party here in New Hampshire. And the issue of life and the issue of marriage are very separate issues. I know that they get lumped together all the time as these social issues, but they're not the same
thing.
No, they
are very separate. You're right.
And for a lot of people, the issue of life is not a question of faith. It's a question of liberty. It's a belief that when our founding fathers promised life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, they meant all people, all life, all Americans. And so it goes beyond just being a faith issue. But I do think that where I would agree with Steve is that, this last election, the conversation went into crazy places. The Republican Party does not believe, the Republican Party is very much a supporter and a promoter of women having all the protection that they need and that they, legal protection, whether we're talking about rape or we're talking about access to, medical care or anything else. When we start talking about, I forget what was the phrase that was used, I don't even want to be the one to bring it up and repeat it again, legitimate rape or something like that. I think Republicans were very strong in their response to that. I know that I came out the same day immediately very strongly against that. But as Steve said, the Democrats were very effective this last time in making sure that every Republican wore the mistakes of just a few.
Well, and we've run out of time, and we didn't even get a chance to talk about where New Hampshire fits in all this. The report does super
first
quick.
First in the nation.
Steve,
right. That's where we fit.
First time in since we've had our primary, there's been an official acknowledgement that New Hampshire deserves its status. That's huge. 20 years ago when I was on the committee with Hugh Gregg, it was outright animosity. Then it went to indifference. Then it went to marginal acceptance to now, no matter what they do, they believe those four early states give the lesser well-known, lesser-funded candidate a fair shot. That's been our point all along.
And that'll be a conversation we have again as this process gets closer. We won't go there now, but Dean Spiliotis, so what's next for this giant report that we've been talking about this hour?
Well, it certainly has fostered a lot of discussion within the party. My concern is that it's going to cause institutional elites to dig in their heels and say these are a lot of problems in the party, and it's also going to cause conservatives to dig in their heels and say this is a power grab by institutional elites. So my sense is that the kind of the pitch battle between these two sides that is kind of, I think, reflected both in the report and the reaction to the report, it's going to continue on until somebody emerges that can kind of unite the party. I don't know who that's going to be yet, and it may not be in 16. It may be 20 or beyond.
Yeah, that leader that our guests talked about. Dean, thank you very much for being here. I appreciate it.
Sure. My pleasure, Laura.
Dean Spiliotis, civic scholar in the School of Arts and Sciences at Southern New Hampshire University, author of the website nhpoliticalcapital.com. Jennifer Horn, good to see you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much, Laura.
Jennifer Horn, New Hampshire GOP chairman and the Republican nominee for the 2nd congressional district in 08. And Steve Dupree, thank you also for your time.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Steve Dupree, New Hampshire GOP committeeman, former chairman of the party, and a member of the RNC Executive Committee. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. Our engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our intern is Faith Mikesell. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Kanoy.